Welcome to the Angletopia podcast, the podcast for people who love British travel, history, and culture. This week, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to start an irregular series of podcasts that we're calling the Angletopia Guide to Blank. And our first guide is going to be to Cumbria and the Lake District. I've actually been to Cumbria and the Lake District, and it's not something I've written a lot about or shared a lot about on the podcast before, for reasons I'll get into in a little bit, but I thought it was as good a time as any to share my experiences with Cumbria and how you can have a nice and enjoyable holiday in the Lake District. First of all, I also need to test some new podcast recording software before I inflict it upon our guests. So this is me being the guinea pig of this new software. So we will start at the beginning. Now, Cumbria and the Lake District have very romantic destinations. They're famous for literature, they're famous for culture, but it's also Cumbria and the Lake District are very remote. They're at the tippy top of Northwest England. They're hard to get to. A lot of Americans don't even make the journey or consider visiting it on their trips. But Cumbria and the Lake District are huge destinations for the British themselves. And many would argue that the soul of British culture and literature kind of lives in the Lake District, mostly because of its connections with William Wordsworth and his poetry. So, and we're going to talk about all that. So I think the first sort of thing we should do is kind of explain what Cumbria and the Lake District are. They're separate things and where they are geographically. Like I said, they're in Northwest England, the very top. You go any further, you're going to Scotland. If you go south, you're going to towards Manchester and Liverpool and the other northern cities. And so it's kind of wedged between those northern powerhouses and Scotland, but it's kind of on a little peninsular area that makes it very remote from the rest of Britain. And actually, it was the furthest point that the Romans went when they had conquered Britain. They actually built a fort at Hardknott that had a view of the Irish Sea, and that was like the furthest extent of Roman incursion into northern England besides Hadrian's Wall. So it's a very quintessentially English destination, and it has a long and bloody history as a borderland between England and Scotland. It used to be called Cumberland. Now it's called Cumbria. And Cumbria kind of encompasses the entire structural political entity of the Lake District. As in all of the Lake District is within Cumbria. Cumbria is the county, and that, and not all of the county encompasses the Lake District, which is confusing, I know. The Lake District is composed primarily of the area set out in the Lake District National Park, which is almost, I believe, all completely within Cumbria. And that area, it's probably like 2/3 of Cumbria is the Lake District. And that's where the lakes are, these beautiful glacial mountainous lakes that are something akin to what you would see in Switzerland or like in the mountains in New York. Now, to give you some kind of comparison, like these are small lakes. That doesn't mean they're not impressive. Like I'm from Indiana. I live near Lake Michigan. To me, Lake Michigan is a lake, and Lake Michigan is massive. The Great Lakes are massive. I believe they're a quarter of the world's fresh. The lakes, by comparison, in Cumbria are very small. I mean, the biggest one is only a few miles long, but it doesn't mean they don't pack a beauty punch. And these lakes, the way they are carved into the landscape and the way they're shaped by the mountains, it creates this unique and beautiful place that has inspired literature for generations. And, you know, people say, we have lakes and mountains in America. Why would you want to go to England to see lakes and mountains? Well, they're beautiful. That's a reason to see them and all, but also it's these literary and historical connections that make them very much worth seeing. If you were an English major like I was, it's where William Wordsworth was inspired. It's where he was born and raised and lived his life. And that's where he wrote his most famous poems. So, you know, it's you cannot throw a stone in the Lake District without somebody mentioning Wordsworth. But it's also that literary tradition continues to this day. And that kind of is the segue into why I was even there to begin with. So story time, everybody. So back in just 2015, 2016, I read an amazing book called The Shepherd's Life by James Rebanks, and it is what the title says on the tin. It is a lyrical exploration of the life of a shepherd of Hardwick sheep in the Lake District. And it's a beautiful picture of a pastoral way of life that in a lot of places doesn't exist anymore, but that is kind of jealously held on to by the people who pursue it. And it's one of the best British nature books I've ever read. And the author, James actually came to the U.S., I don't remember when, it's like 2015 or 2016, and he came to the University of Chicago and did a speech. And so I went and saw him in person, and he signed my book. And spoiler alert, but he actually remembered me from this book signing. So I read this book, and I loved it. And then fast forward to 2018, James was famous. He actually got the book deal because he chronicled his life as a shepherd on Twitter and on social media, and that's he went viral. And so fast forward a couple of years, and I actually followed James Rebanks on social media, and that's how he got the book deal. He got famous for going viral for chronicling his life as a shepherd on social media with gorgeous pictures. He's a great photographer as well as a great writer. And people just kind of fell in love with him chronicling his way of life. And so he wrote this great book. And so again, I followed him for years on social media. And one day he tweeted out that he, in partnership with another author named Catherine Alto, who wrote The Natural World of Winnie the Pooh, that they were partnering to launch something called the Rural Writers Institute. And they wanted to open applications up for the first cohort of applicants for a writer's retreat that would take place on James's farm in Cumbria. And their goal of this retreat was to foster a new generation of writers who want to write about Britain's landscape and culture and countryside. And I read that tweet, and I immediately thought that Rural Writers Institute was geared exactly towards me as a writer. I am in love with the British landscape. I've been writing about it for 20 years. And in the pursuit of Angletopia and writing about Britain for Angletopia, this is getting into the weeds a little bit, but I wasn't quite doing the kind of writing that I wanted to do about Britain. I was very like, you know, writing top 10 lists and travel guides is much different than writing about and having a landscape or doing the kind of writing that James did in his book. That's the kind of writing I really wanted to do. And so I immediately put in an application, and I wrote an essay basically explaining that criteria that I wanted to learn how to write more thoughtfully about Britain's landscape and culture. And that that's why I wanted a place in the course. And I submitted the letter with some writing samples and, crossed my fingers and hoped that something would happen. Well, a few weeks later, I got an email from Catherine, and they had accepted me I was astonished and thrilled, and it was amazing to be chosen, and that they saw something in my writing that was worth, you know, spending this writer's retreat with them to learn some of the greatest writers and writing in Britain right now. So, and I've kind of written about this experience in a few ways, but I've never really written about the writer's retreat itself or talked much about it because it was kind of a very private thing. There were 15 of us in the first group. And it was it was one of the best sort of weekends of my life, communing with the landscape, learning about writing from Catherine and James, meeting these famous authors. And they also brought in a bunch of other authors who gave lectures and talked to us about writing in the landscape. And I mean, it was incredible. I cannot tell you how wonderful this experience was. But on the practical side of it, after I got accepted to this course, I was accepted, I believe, in May, and this thing was happening in July. So I had to plan an entire trip to the UK with like 8 weeks notice and figure out how to pay for it. And needs must, I figured it out. But it required a lot of planning. And, you know, so that's how I kind of ended up in Cumbria in the Lake District. And so, you know, because I have a wonderful, supportive wife who supports my career and my travel adventures when they're necessary, she couldn't come with me because I was the only one invited to the course. and she couldn't get away. So she'd watch the kids and I could travel to the UK for this thing. And so, and to make the most of it, we're like, well, you're going over there. You might as well go for more than just the retreat. You should go for at least a week. And that way you can do all the Angletopia things that you would do when you visit a new place and see things and explore things and then do the writer's retreat and then come home. So as a consequence, I found myself suddenly planning a trip to the Lake District in Cumbria. And it's a place I've always wanted to visit. And so I was delighted to be able to do this. And so I think that it makes a great way as a springboard to kind of tell you about the things I saw and did and experienced so that you can plan your own trips to Cumbria and the Lake District. So so I'll kind of just walk you through the trip. And then I'm going through my show notes here. So I talked about geography. So getting to Cumbria and the Lake District is the hard part. Like I said, it's very remote. It's, you know, at the tippy top of England. It's as far away from London as you can get going into Scotland. And it's within Britain. You know, you can get there by train. There are airports in Northern England. But when you're coming from the US, that's a different sort of set of logistical problems because it does not make sense to fly into London if your destination is the Lake District, because you're going to get to London and then you're still 6-7 hours by car from the Lake District, you know, or a all-day train ride or a coach ride. It doesn't make sense to fly into Heathrow. But most transatlantic flights from Chicago, where I live, and New York, they go into Heathrow or Gatwick or the London airports. So, but I was lucky that back in 2018, American Airlines was offering seasonal flights from Chicago to Manchester, one flight a day. It wasn't even every day of the week, but they were running it during the summer, and they do not run this flight anymore because demand was too low. But when I went, it was great. It flew direct from Chicago to Manchester. And so now Manchester is not particularly close to the Lake District, but it's closer than London is. And so I should also mention before I move on that you could also fly into Edinburgh and drive down from Edinburgh. That will probably be closer. That's much closer than flying from London. However, not a lot of airlines fly to Edinburgh, at least none fly to Edinburgh from Chicago. I think United has a seasonal, but other than that, like if you want to fly to Edinburgh, you got to fly from New York, which I don't want to do because I live in Chicago. So anyway, the plan was for me to fly into Manchester. I flew on American Airlines, which was the first time actually in like 20 trips that I flew an airline other than British Airways to Britain. I like to think that it was okay because I used my British Airways Avios miles to book it, and I used the British Airways system to book it. And American Airlines is in a co-share partnership with British Airways anyway. So it didn't feel like cheating on British Airways. Besides, they weren't flying me to Manchester anyway. So I flew to Manchester, and then I rented a car because, again, that's really the best way to get around Cumbria and the Lake District is to have a car. You could go, unless you're in a tour group on a coach that is going from destination to destination, so if you're on your own, really the best way to get around is by car, because the Lake District is very poorly served by trains and buses because it's so remote and it's so, the population there isn't high and it has a very seasonal tourist traffic. So there are very few trains. There are very few buses. You want to get around Cumbria, you need a car. So I rented a car. And so, but the problem is that Manchester is 2 hours from Cumbria and the Lake District. So I had to get off of a plane and drive 2 hours to the Lake District. So it was a nice drive. I'd never driven up there before. So I was perfectly happy driving somewhere new. I stopped at the famous motorway services, I believe that was... I think it's outside of, I think it's called the Lancaster Services. I should have looked this up before I did. It's one that looks like a UFO taking off. So I stopped at that motorway services because, you know, I love a good motorway services station, and then drove to Cumbria. And so the plan was to stay in a single place for the entire week. A lot of us in the course, we kind of corresponded before the course. We're all kind of staying in the same hotels and B&Bs so that we could all like carpool and kind of make the most of being in close proximity. So a lot of us were staying at the Troutbeck Inn, which is just outside of Penrith. And Troutbeck, for those who don't know the geography of the area, is actually not in the Lake District National Park, but it is in Cumbria, but on the very edge of both. So you're kind of, you're next to a main highway, but you can see the mountains. It's a beautiful spot. It's very, again, very remote. Like, other than the hotel, which is also a pub, there was like nothing around. And so that was where I was going to stay. I was going to stay there the whole week because I arrived off a transatlantic flight. And even though I had a 2-hour drive, I still arrived before the hotel really wanted to accommodate me. But she was kind enough to let me in early, got my room, and then I was basically like, I had the whole rest of the day to do something. So I was jet lagged, I was hungry, and I needed a cup of tea. So I found that there was a National Trust property nearby called the Air Force Waterfall National Trust. I thought, oh, go for a stroll, see a waterfall, and I'll have some National Trust tea and cake. And so I drove over there. And Air Force is right by Oldswater, which is one of the most famous lakes in Cumbria. I'm one of those people that had that famous print from IKEA of Oldswater in my bathroom for many years. And so I went to Air Force, went for the walk, saw the waterfall, saw some beautiful flora and fauna, discovered the purple foxglove flowers, which were beautiful. And then I walked back to the tea room. And I got there too late and it was closed. So I didn't get my tea and cake. By then I could go back to the hotel and get a proper meal because they were ready for me. And so I love the Troutbeck Inn. It was a great place to explore Cumbria and the Lake District. And so I arrived like 2 or 3 days before the writer's retreat was starting. So this gave me a chance to basically explore Cumbria and the Lake District as at my leisure. So over the next few days, I tried to do kind of like a highlights tour of things in the Lake District that would interest me or that I should see that would provide valuable content. And a lot of these things I have written about, I have shared lots about. I'll link in the show notes to the archive of all the articles I've written about the places I went and saw, but I'm going to talk about them. So the first place I visited was the Castle Rigg Stone Circle, which is one of the Neolithic or prehistoric stone circles in the Lake District. And it's in a beautiful spot where there's mountains over mountain valleys overlooking you. Gorgeous, mysterious place. No one knows why it's there, but then, you know, that's how we don't know much about any of the stone circles. It's neat. I wrote an article about it. I'll link it in the show notes. Then I went to Derwent, to the Derwent Pencil Museum, which is in Keswick, I believe. It's not on Derwent Water, but the Pencil Museum was a new attraction at the time, and it is dedicated to the Derwent Pencil Company. I went to the museum. I went right when it opened for the day. I haven't met a small provincial English museum I didn't particularly love. So it was lovely. Although there were quite a few, there were probably more pencil sharpeners as museum pieces than I could appreciate truly, but they go into the history of the pencils and lead mining and all that. And then you exit through the gift shop, which obviously was filled with Derwent pencils. They were very expensive, but I bought some for my kids back home. And you know, there was a cafe on site and all that. And then I explored Keswick, which was beautiful. And yeah, it was a great start to the day. And then I wasn't planning on visiting Dove Cottage, which is Wordsworth's famous cottage where he lived his adult life. Didn't have time, but I did have time to visit one Wordsworth attraction. And so that was going to be his childhood home, which is located in the town/village of Cockermouth. That is a real place name. I am not being profane. It is a real place called Cockermouth. It's because it's at the mouth of a river called the Cocker. Get your stickers in. If you would like to know of more funny, amusing British place names, we have a list on our website, which I will link to in the show notes. But it's a beautiful town. And so in the middle of it is Wordsworth House National Trust property. And it's a Georgian house kind of set up as it was when he was a child growing up there. You walk in and it kind of feels like the family had just walked out for the day. Super cool, super atmospheric. You learn about Wordsworth. You learn about Dorothy Wordsworth, who is, you know, as important as Wordsworth in literary canon, and how they grew up there together. There's a beautiful garden out back, which made my hay fever go nuts. That's another thing. I went, you know, this is the middle of the summer, and my, you know, back home, I don't really have allergies in the summer anymore. My body's kind of used to it. But when I was in Cumbria, my body was not used to all the foreign allergens. And I had bad allergies the entire time I was there. And the allergy medicine we got, that, and this was a problem actually for even for the British locals who weren't from the area, they had allergy problems too. So we all traded tips on which allergy medicines try. But anyway, I'm digressing. But we went to Wordsworth House, was great. And then, but since it was a National Trust property, you know what that means? There was a tea and cake in the cafe on site. So I had a lovely tea and cake. And then I got in my car and drove on to my next destination, which was Broom Castle, which is back towards where I was staying. Broom Castle is a castle ruin sitting on the edge of a river. I think it's the Troutbeck. I could be wrong. And it's a beautiful, beautiful castle ruin, because it was a weekday and I was like the only one there. Except for another American family who managed to come that far north, who were also walking around. And I will link to an article I've written about that in the show notes with pictures. Yeah. And so, and then the next thing I did, I don't know if it was the same day or the next day, all kind of blends together at this point. I took a ride on the famous Ullswater steamer boat. So Ullswater, it's a long glacial lake, and the steamer boats, they run from end to end throughout the day. So a lot of people will take the steamer from, what's the name of it? I can't remember the name of it, but I have an article about it, which I will link to in the show notes. And Pooley Bridge, yes. Boats leave from Pooley Bridge, and then they go down to the other end of the lake, and then they come back. In the summer season, sometimes they'll stop at other places, and some people will walk. Will do a combination of taking the steamer. They'll do a walk to another steamer boat stop, and then they'll get back on the boat. It's a great way to spend a day out, because the steamer ride, even though the lake is small, you know, it takes like an hour on the steamer. It's an old Victorian steamer boat. I love a good steam engine. So I was thrilled, although it was very hot, very hungry, and very thirsty. So even though I had a snack, I was very hungry. And so we took the steamer across the lake, stopped at the other end for a few minutes, and then got back on the boat, went back the other way. And it was, I enjoyed going back more than I did going the other way. And the article I'm going to share in the show notes will kind of explain why. It's, kind of had to slow down and take in where I was and what I was doing, rather than stop trying to hit every thing on my to-do list. So it's just kind of just, I, you know, my camera batteries died, so I couldn't work and I had no phone signal. So like, I just had to sit there and take in the glorious view I was experiencing on its own, rather than trying to record it. And so that was like a pivot point in the trip for me. And it's like, slow down, be more thoughtful about what you're doing. And yeah, it was one of those nice Zen moments. So, so after that, the writer's retreat that was starting. So I wouldn't be a tourist anymore. And it would be all in on the writer's retreat. And so that night we had a dinner at Troutbeck Inn, where we all met each other for the first time. We met James for the first time, and Catherine, and then the next day we would begin the retreat. And so again, I'm not going to talk about the retreat. It was very much a private experience. I have written about bits and pieces of it, and I'll share those in the show notes, but basically it was the most instructive and useful time in my writing career I had since I was in college, you know, learning the skills and trade of being an English major. And so it was inspiring. It was super cool to see where someone like James works. I've had desk envy ever since I saw his oak tables where he works, and his view is of the Cumbrian Fells, and it's incredible. I mean, how could you not be inspired to write about it when you live there like that? And so he, and during during the course, we were all kind of very conscious that he was taking a break from working on his next book so that he could teach us. And that made it a lot more meaningful because he was having a lot of trouble with it. And that book did eventually come out, and it's called English Pastoral. And it's more about him running his farm and how he's trying to improve the landscape in Cumberland Lake District, not just for him, but for fellow farmers, and how he treats the fact that his family has been on this land for hundreds of years. And it's a fantastic sequel to A Shepherd's Life. Highly recommend getting this book as well. It's a very good book. And it's kind of cool to think that this is what he was wrestling with while we were learning from him. So it's very cool. I also recommend Catherine's book, which she wrote shortly after, where she profiles a bunch of famous women nature writers. And again, I'll link that in the show notes. But yeah, we all came away from the experience learning about writing in a way we hadn't thought of before. We came all inspired. I picked up some new techniques, and it also helped me reevaluate how I write about Britain. And it also, so it helped sort of after that. I don't know if this is of interest to anybody, but I'll talk about it anyway. And you can skip ahead if it doesn't interest you. But while I was doing this, and before and after, I was working on a travel memoir about called Adventures in Angletopia. And I was really wrestling with it and struggling to kind of make it relevant and make it work and make it cohesive. And after the writer's retreat and after workshopping the book with a lot of my fellow classmates and with James and Catherine, kind of getting like a clicked what needed to happen with the book and what I needed to do with it. And so when I got home, I basically I didn't scrap what I was working on, but I kind of restarted it anew and eventually did finish the travel memoir after like another year or so of hard work, and then began the process of trying to find a publisher and get an agent and all that. And by 2020, it was very clear that I had talked to an agent, a couple agents, and they were like, this is a great book, but we don't think there's a market for it in the US, so we're not interested. And you know, as the founder of an American publication dedicated to these things, I knew there was a market for it. And so I ended up publishing it myself in 2020. And so the link to where you can buy it will be in the show notes. And that book was highly successful. But it also showed a shift in the way I wanted to write about Britain, and was more thoughtful and less travel guide oriented. It really also fed the next book I wrote, which was End to End, Britain from Lands of the Jean of Roots. That experience, which we took later that year, when we were on the trip, I approached it so much differently than I would have before the Rural Writers Institute. Another book came from that. And now I'm working on the third one, which will come out hopefully later this autumn. But it was, the writer's retreat was great, left with new friends. You know, I still talk to James and Catherine occasionally. There's a very vibrant WhatsApp group from all the former classmates. And it's fun watching a lot of my other former classmates. Their books are finally coming out that they've always wanted to write, or they have articles published in very famous magazines. And it's really cool to see all these people who were fostered in this, you know, weekend long writer's retreat are finally flourishing in nature writing and landscape writing and countryside writing in Britain. So it's really cool to see. So that's enough about the Rural Writers Institute, because I said I wasn't going to talk much about it, but I ended up talking a lot about it. I also wanted to recommend The Place of Tides, which is James's latest book, which came out last year. And this is not about Britain. And actually, timeline wise, he had this experience shortly after the Rural Writers Institute, and he spent a whole season on this small island in Norway with this incredible woman who is a down feather farmer. I'm not doing the description justice here. It's a phenomenal book. I highly recommend it. It's very good. And it shows that James has range beyond just writing about English landscapes. So I can't wait to see what he writes next. But back to traveling around Cumberland Lake District, enough about my own writing about it. So when the course was over, I still had another day to explore the area. And so for the longest time, I had wanted to try something called the Hard Knot Pass. And for those who are unfamiliar, the Hard Knot Pass is Britain's most steepest and dangerous road. And it's funny, long, long time ago in our early Angletopia days, 2008, 2009, we had a columnist who lived in Northern England. She was an American and she had learned how to drive there. And she wrote a whole article about driving the Hard Knot Pass and how it was an achievement because she had to drive a manual and it was really hard and it was a big deal. And so ever since then, I've always like, well, I want to do that too. But so I was determined to drive the Hard Knot Pass with my final day in Cumbria, and all my classmates in the RWI were suitably impressed. They were like, well, be careful. It's a public road. It's not that dangerous, but it has a 15% grade. And if you don't know what that means, there's the regulations on U.S. highways are like that the grade can't be more than 3 or 4. So this is 15%. So it's steep. And once you're committed to doing this drive or once you're on it, you can't turn around because it's basically the way the traffic moves and the way the curves move. Like you're either going one way or you're going to need like mountain rescue to come rescue you. And there are points where the road basically falls off the side of the mountain where like you look down and there's just mountain. And you're like, I hope my car doesn't go down there. And so I set off for that journey. That was a lot of fun, very nerve-wracking. I was very glad I didn't have Mrs. Angletopia with me for that one. She gets very nervous in the car sometimes. And I imagine she would have been very nervous going through the Hard Knot Pass. And it was one of the coolest things I've ever done in travel in Britain. You know, this idea that you have to work to see this landscape and you have to, you know, to get through this pass, you have to really do some scary driving. But even while you're doing it, you're experiencing this landscape in a way that almost nobody ever does, because a lot of people, again, don't come this far north. And they're certainly not going to drive the Hard Knot Pass. They're going to go around it. And so I didn't go around it. I went through it. And so so after the Hard Knot Pass is the Hard Knot Roman Fort, which I mentioned earlier, which is the furthest extent that the Roman Empire went. It's a really atmospheric place, partially been rebuilt through conservation work. It's mostly a ruin, but again, it's like half the ruin has been rebuilt. So how much is authentic? You just use your imagination, but it's really cool to imagine Roman soldiers, many of whom were not from Britain, were from far corners of the Roman Empire, standing there at the edge of civilization. You can see the Irish Sea and see the Isle of Man off in the distance, and you know there's more land there, and it's super cool. So then I drove from there through the Eske Valley and came across a steam railway. And those who follow Angletopia will know that I cannot say no to a good steam railway. And it was a narrow gauge railway that runs the length. It runs from the station head all the way to the seaside at Ravenglass, which is like the coolest name for a town ever or village ever. And so when I got there, I didn't know this train was there. It was a serendipitous discovery. And so I was like, all right, I get to go on a train ride. I'm thrilled. So I arrived just in time for the next train. So I bought a ticket, hopped on and rode the train. It was very hot that day and the train, it's a narrow gauge, open air railway. But it was fun. You ride the train through some of the most beautiful landscapes I've ever seen in my life. And we rode it all the way to Ravenglass at the sea. They deposit you at the seaside. You walk through the village. There's not much there other than a couple of pubs and beautiful landscape. Went for a little stroll. There's a museum in the station there. And then like an hour later, it was time to take the train back to the station. And so I did that, which took another hour. By then, I was getting tired, but I was like, you know, I'm still here. I still got it's only early afternoon. I've got the rest of the day. And so I looked on my phone to see what was nearby, and there was a castle nearby. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to see a castle because why not? And so I drove from the train station through the Eske Valley to the end and came upon Muncaster Castle. And if that name sounds familiar, I will link in the show notes to the episode of the podcast. If Muncaster Castle sounds familiar, that's because I have actually done a podcast interview with the husband of the owner of Muncaster Castle, which was a fascinating discussion. I'll link to that in the show notes, and you can learn all about Muncaster Castle and its fascinating history. It was my last stop for the day, and it was phenomenal. Again, it was the middle of the week in the summer, and I had like the place to myself. So I, you know, wandered around the castle, wandered around the grounds, enjoyed every bit of it. And for a nice stroll, it was peak. I was at peak happiness. You know, I'd done a cool drive. I ridden a steam train, even though it was narrow gauge. Narrow gauges are cool. And then I got to go see a castle. So it was great. It was a great day out. And so I was there for a couple hours, and then it was time to basically head back to my hotel, which was very far away. And I should mention that you go by Scaffold Pike when you go through the Esk Valley, which is the tallest mountain in England. I was not good to be climbing that day, but I needed to get back to my hotel, and I did not want to go back through the Hard Knot Pass. So I was like, once was enough. But because of the way Cumbrian Lake District is laid out, going around the Hard Knot Pass requires going on a very, very long, circuitous drive around the coastline of Cumbria and back up through the middle of the county. So that's what I did. And, you know, when I'm in England, I love driving. I mean, I love driving back home too. I like driving long distances. I'm from the Midwest, you know. We love driving 8 hours to nowhere. So I'm at my happiest sitting in a rental car in England, classic FM playing on the radio and just driving. And so I drove the road that followed the coast pretty much all the way around until it turns back up into going through central Cumbria. And the sea was incredible. It was like diamond glass water. You could see the Isle of Man. You could see the hint of Ireland off in the distance. There I drove by interesting infrastructure like nuclear power plants and whatnot, and trains, and it was super cool. Beautiful drive, top day. So I drove back to the hotel, and that was it for my final day. So I crashed. I had dinner at the hotel. I ate dinner at the hotel most nights just because it was easy. That's the nice thing about staying in a pub with rooms is you got a place to eat if above anything else, and you got a place to eat breakfast. So I ate dinner there and packed up. The next day, it was the end of my week in Cumbria. I'd drive down to Manchester, return the car, get on the flight, and come home. And so that's my experience with Cumbria and the Lake District. Now, I haven't been to Cumbria since then, and I'm very excited that next year I will kind of be in the area when I do the Hadrian's Wall walk. Hadrian's Wall is a bit further north, but Bowness on Solway is what borders the northern edge of Cumbria. So I'll see bits of Cumbria and I'll kind of be in the general area. So looking forward to being in that area again. And if I have time, maybe I'll see a lake or two that I didn't get to see on this trip, because the lakes, they're beautiful. Let's see, what else am I leaving out here? So I'm leaving out some important bits. So those are my experiences. Now let's talk about some geography and some places and some things you should see that maybe I didn't see, but want to see. Gives me reasons to go back. If I do go back, definitely going to go to Dove Cottage for the Wordsworth Connection. It's basically making a literary pilgrimage for a lot of people. But also, I think I want to go to Hilltop Farm. Now, that's Beatrix Potter's farmhouse. And so for people who don't know the story, if you saw the movie Miss Potter, they kind of touch on this at the end. After she became famous, rich and famous from the Beatrix Potter books, the Peter Rabbit books, she dedicated herself to preserving the landscape of the Lake District. And so at first she started buying up farms and keeping the farmers on the farms. And then she also became an important woman, a stock woman to the Hardwick sheep, which are what James Rebanks keeps. And she's a hero to him. She's like a saint up in the Lake District for the way she kept the rare breeds going. And so she was critical in the foundation, the early foundations of the National Trust. So the reason so much of the Lake District landscape is protected is because of Beatrix Potter and her using her wealth to kind of make the park a going concern. So I definitely want to go to Hilltop Farm, which is her farmhouse where she spent the latter half of her life. So I'd also like to see the Ruskin Museum, which is the home of the famous Victorian thinker John Ruskin, you know, one of the first critics. Everyone loves a critic, right? And then there's also a couple abandoned abbeys I want to see. There's a couple more castles. There aren't a lot of stately homes in Cumbria. There are a few, but there wasn't ever a lot of wealth in the Lake District. It's always been at the edge of British society economically. The hills were a landscape to make a living from. So which is why sheep were so successful there. These hardwood sheep, which have lineages from Norwegian sheep and can survive in these hardy landscapes. And so it's really been a place where people kind of scrap an existence. And so there was never a lot of wealth generated there, like in other places, like say the Cotswolds, where they got rich off Cotswold wool, or the Yorkshire Dales, where they also got rich on wool. So you don't want hardwood wool for anything. You only want to eat hardwood sheep. So some local food to try when you're there. Definitely have a Cumberland sausage, which is different than sausages elsewhere in England. I have a Kendall mint cake, which is very famous. Lots of pubs and restaurants to see. I didn't have a single bad meal my entire visit in Cumbria. So lots of good places to eat. What can you do other than visit beautiful places? Well, there's beaches. I mean, there's lakes. You can go sailing. You can do fell running if you want to run up hills. You can do fun things like do a dry stone wall course where you can learn how to dry stone wall. James Rebanks actually gave us a demonstration of that when we were at the RWI, and that was really cool and interesting. There's working farms where that are kind of turned into tourist attractions. James kind of shuns turning his farm into a tourist attraction simply because if he was running a tourist attraction, he couldn't write, and writing is his vocation. Farming is his job, and it's his connection to the land, but he's always meant to be a writer, and so that's what he focuses his time on. Beware the weather changing constantly. It is England, after all, and its borders the Irish Sea, which can be moody. I was lucky the entire time we were there, the sun was shining, which summers in the Lake District can be like that, and which is why it's so popular for British people to visit. That's the thing. That's one of the points I want to make, is that because a lot of Americans don't make this journey that far north, and that's such a remote place, you kind of have, it's a place British people travel for holiday. It's a place where British people visit when they go on vacation. And so you're really only, your encounters are going to be with other British people. And so if you really want to get a sense of Britishness and how they vacation and how they holiday, then Cumbria and the Lake District is the place to go for that. Again, in the summer, it's going to be busy, but like I was there in July, and but I was there mostly during the week, and so it wasn't that crowded. But then on my last day, when I was driving back from having done the Hard Knot Pass, and I came through Windermere, which is like the most touristy of the Lake District cities or towns, like the traffic barely moved as I was going through there. I actually took a diversion so I could avoid the traffic. Like, it can get very crowded very quickly because, again, these places aren't designed to have lots of visitors. So when they do have lots of visitors, it takes patience. So I wouldn't necessarily go in the summer again if I could avoid it. I would choose a bumper season. I would not go in the winter, you know, just as I say, I've followed James Rebanks's Twitter postings for years. Winter in the Lake District is hard. It is cold, it is wet, and it stays cold and wet for a big chunk of the winter. So like in southern England, like the winter can be pretty pleasant. It's a lot warmer than winters are here in the US. It can be wet, but for the most part things stay green and the weather's kind of mild. They don't get extreme cold in Britain, but in Cumbria they can get that extreme cold, and they do get snow, especially at the top of the mountains and fells. So I wouldn't go in the winter. Go in the shoulder seasons. If you do go in the summer, though, you get the benefit because it's so far north. Like the sun doesn't set till like 11 p.m. in the summer. Like, it was so weird. Like, we had these author events that would go to like 11 o'clock, and there was still like this twilight at 11 p.m. It was so cool. It also made it hard to sleep, though. So it's kind of like going to, you know, to like Norway or Scandinavia in the summer, like, or like in the winter when it's daylight all day. Like, it's daylight. Like, oh, it's too much. So that's if you want to kind of pre-prepare culturally for the Lake District. There are a couple books about Lake District culture that I'll share in the show notes. But read William Wordsworth, read Samuel Taylor Coleridge, read Robert Southey, read Beatrix Potter. She was inspired by the landscape. I mean, because that's where her family holidayed, and what inspired her to write Peter Rabbit. So, you know, and if you're going to be in the Lake District, you want to be outside. So, you know, plan it so that you can go for a walk, go for a hike. I'm not saying you have to climb Scaffold Pike, but do what I did. Go do the Air Force Walk, where you get to go see a pretty waterfall, you go through a valley, and you're done after an hour. There's also, most of the lakes will have public footpaths that go all the way around them. So like Oldswater, I think it's like 8 or 9 miles long, but there's like a 25-mile walk that goes around the lake, and you can do that if you're lazy and out of shape like me. Maybe do it in 2 days or 3 days, or do what a lot of people do, which is they take the boat part of the way, walk part of the way, and take the boat back. So also something I really want to see next time is the Via Ferrata, which is at the Honister Slate Mine, and Cumbria used to be known for its slate. Its slate is on the roofs of thousands upon thousands of buildings in Britain, but slate's uneconomical now to mine in Britain. So, but the slate mine's still there, and you can still, if you want to buy true Lake District slate, you can. They have a gift shop, so you can buy a cheese board made of slate if you would like. So I would say, to wrap this up, that Cumbria and the Lake District should definitely be on the radar for American tourists. My fellow Americans, go to Cumbria and the Lake District. It's beautiful. It's remote. And if you really want to get a sense of place, read the books I mentioned, English Pastoral or The Shepherd's Life, give you kind of a taste of what life is like there. It's one of the best weeks of my life I've spent in Britain. I would love to go again, plan to go again. Definitely want to go back with my wife because I think she would really like it. It's just, it's one of those things where even when you go for a drive through the lakes, like every turn of the road is like the most beautiful place you've ever seen. So until I had driven in Scotland later on, you know, I had just had no idea how incredibly beautiful England and Britain's mountain landscapes can be. I just never thought about it because, you know, I'm a flat Midwesterner. And one of the things I've always loved about England is how hilly it is, but it's more than hilly. There are mountains. And the mountains are beautiful and they are worth seeing, and it's worth going out of your way to go there. So if you can book your own trip up to Cumbria and the Lake District, I highly recommend it. I don't feel like I can really do it justice in 1 hour. So if you have any questions about Cumbria and the Lake District, I'm happy to answer them. And I'm also happy to refer you to more prominent sources who can help you plan a trip there. So with that, if you enjoyed the Angletopia podcast, please subscribe, like us, or leave a comment. Please join the Friends of Angletopia Club, where you can support great long-form writing about British travel, history, and culture. And we hope to see you next time. Thank you very much.